Devin and Morgana have been celebrating midlife love by getting married 100 times in 100 countries. They believe grown-up love gets better and more fun, especially for women. Everyone's smarter, wiser. Men are more relationship-ready. And if they're not, it's obvious. Forget anything you were told about being too old or too late for love and adventure. Instead, get fresh new tips on dating, relating, and travel to exotic destinations. And best of all, call in for personal guidance, creating crazy, sexy midlife love in your life.
Hello. It's Devin and Morgana again. I'm Devin. I've been a life and business coach for 26 years. My husband, Devin, has been a relationship coach. And what else?
Editor-in-chief of In the Know Traveler and purveyor of happy relationships.
Yes. And you've also been teaching Kabbalah and Tarot and...
Yeah, all of those things are true. The Western Mysteries as a whole, all kinds of fun stuff like that. And here we are on camera.
We've been doing just ourselves for a few weeks because the technology of adding video is a little complicated. We're still new at it. And I thought...
I would just call it a drag. It's, you know,
that's strong language, my love.
It's, oh, I don't know. Listen, I'd say anybody who's watching this probably has a sense of humor and probably have already heard us talk. So it's okay, right?
Oh, yeah.
I'm actually talking to them out there in TV internet-ish land. You know, listen, it's fine. I mean, yeah, no, without question, there's a few kinks to be worked out. And, you know, the technology, I think, is really cool. But, you know.
But I thought we should have some practice before we invite somebody else on to complicate it further.
Oh, yeah. I don't even know how that's going to pan out. That's going to be a different level of adventure.
We'll find out on the 18th.
Are we doing that?
Yeah.
Oh, my gosh.
Already booked to get somebody.
Who, in fact, are we punishing for that?
Steve Ulscher.
Steve Ulscher.
What did he do to deserve that?
I don't know. You just shake your fist at the heavens. That's all you can do. But Steve Ulscher will be with us, joining us, talking about love
and
relationships.
Wife, yeah, and balancing business and love.
Which is tricky, but doable and amazing and all possible. And, you know, I think it's one of those things that by the time you get to sort of our vintage, we get to be in a place where we can juggle things, probably not as many things, but we get to be more selective and mindful of the things that we are juggling.
Yeah. And the funny thing for me is when I was single, I knew a lot of single people. And when I hooked up with you, it's like the world changed and I suddenly started meeting all these happily married people, which... It's like, where were they all those years? But suddenly, I'm aware of how many happily married people there are our age.
Well, I mean, honestly, I also think that there's a certain thing that sort of marriage gets a bad rap. And part of it has to do with divorce.
The majority of marriages still end in divorce.
Majority is a shaky word. Majority is a shaky word because
69%?
I think it's probably more like 50, huh?
I keep reading 69%.
I don't know. But here's the thing. Marriage is difficult. I think relationships are difficult. I think people sometimes get married for the wrong reasons. And I think that,
I'm
blessed. I would say that sort of like my closest guys, like the guys that I've been hanging around with, and these are probably some of the people you're referring to.
And by the way, your friends are part of the reason I knew you were a catch, because you have quality friends.
I do. I do have quality friends. And they're loyal friends. I've been with these guys. I mean, one of the guys who are sort of like in my core group of buddies, I've known that guy since second grade. And then everybody else, I think I knew in like junior high school or something like that, which is remarkable. And all of those guys have been in long-term happy relationships. They're all together. I love that, but I also know that in part that, you know, I think they were very conscious when they made particular choices mm-hmm. to kind of be in relationships and be attentive to family and to do those kinds of things.
And they were all grown-ups when they got married. And I think that's part of why I know so many more happy couples, happily married people now than when I was young, because, you know, when you're in your teens and your 20s and your 30s, it's drama. And we're all crazy and we don't know anything about relationship and we make our mistakes. That's not true for everybody. I do, like, one of my best friends met her guy when she was 19. They've been together ever since. But that is mysterious to me.
Well, I you know, in terms of these particular guys, like mm-hmm. Got involved pretty young, but everybody else was sort of like, I think everybody else was in their 30s. And so, you know, I wanted to say, and of course, if they're watching, I please forgive me. None of them were a saint. Do you know what I mean? Like, none of them were sort of like very religious, where there was an expectation that everybody gets married at 20 years old and then does that. That was not the case. As a matter of fact, I was just looking on one of those sort of history, like your genealogy type of websites. Mm-hmm. And I checked it out and I found this is not news, but my grandmother on my father's side, who had 13 children and I think 4 miscarriages and 3 sets of twins in like 5 years, yeah. Which is insane. She got married. First off, my grandfather was born in 1893, which I find that amazing because he would have been 100 and whatever. 127 years, yeah. Old, which is just, I can't wrap my head around that was just 2 generations ago. That all said, he married my grandmother, and of course this was a different time and a different place. He married her when she was 15, and she had her first kid a year later.
Yeah.
Which is... she was 17. Maybe she was 7, or she had just turned 17.
Well, you know, around the world, like when we took our very first trip together and we were traveling through Azerbaijan, and I think we were hearing, you know, that children were, it was, except to our tour guide, thought it was perfectly acceptable for girls to get married at 9 or 13. And I think culturally, a couple generations back, it didn't have the response that I have now.
Right. And of course, her response, you know, my grandmother basically was one of those people. And I wasn't intending to go on this grandmother tangent, but now that we are, I'm following through. I'm sticking with the plan. She was a very devoted person to her family, and that was important. I mean, she had, if I remember correctly, she had 46 grandchildren, 55 or 54 great-grandchildren, and then like another 17 or 18 great-grandchildren, great-great-grandchildren during her lifetime.
That is...
Which is a mind-blowing thing. And she was the kind of person who I would call up. It's not like I called her often, but I did call her. And when I would call her up, I would say, hi, Grandma, because that's what she would do. And she knew me right away. But not only did she know my voice right away, she knew everybody's voice right away. In other words, she was just this dedicated family person. And that grandfather, the grandfather born in 1893, left her with 11 children. And talk about different time and place, left her with 11 children. And then she managed to find a guy with 11 children mm-hmm. and then had 2 more babies with that guy.
Wow.
Which is sort of, again, this falls into the remarkable thing. I think she had that last kid when she was sort of in her mid-40s and the first kid when she was, you know, 16 or 17 years old, which is just...
Exhausting.
Well, exhausting is one way to describe it, to be sure. But certainly dedicated. I mean, she was somebody who was ready to...
just the athleticism of giving birth and raising children like that, I can't even imagine.
Right. So she was this spry, spry lady who was, you know, who lived in into her 90s.
Wow. So that wasn't actually what we were planning to discuss today.
Was it?
No. Shocking. No, I promised, because last week I really focused on relationship with money, because money is such a big issue in human relationships. And it's heartbreaking, because when we are scared about money, it affects how we feel about ourselves. It affects how we feel about the world and it being safe. Women can look to be rescued by really predatory guys when we are coming from that kind of existential fear, because that's what money brings up. And men, it's really cruel for men. Like when a man doesn't have money, he doesn't even feel like he can date. So it's really disempowering and can get in the way of love, even when you have it. So I was focusing on actually what I do professionally, what the focus of my work that I'm known for is really transforming your relationship with money to make it a love-first relationship. So because it was Halloween week last week, I was talking about slaying your money monster, how to get rid of your money monster. And so a couple of questions came in after last week. And so let's take a look. I promised I would answer them today on air. It's a little off our usual happy-go-lucky, crazy, sexy midlife love topic, but it's part of life. And I really want to be of service of whatever is going to get you in the best place for love. So question number one, a reader wrote, can you explain what you meant by change comes with the speed of safety? How can we feel safe in order to manifest change in our life? I love that question, because it's not about money. I mean, this like philosophy about change in general. When you're doing everything you can to get a result, and if you're one of those people where, you know, you read all the books and you take the classes and you put yourself out there, whether it's dating or it's building a business or losing weight or getting healthier, whatever it is, when you're doing everything right and the results over a long period of time don't match the effort that you're putting into it. So I'm really not talking about, ooh, magic quick fix, even though people really describe me as magical and I love to go with that. But if you've been like doing the work to build your career, build your business, make money, find your soulmate, get into shape, and you've been doing it for a really long time and the results just match the effort, what I believe, based on my experience coaching tens of thousands of people for, I think, over 20, you just may not be, looks like we're having internet issues, which is unfortunate. So I don't know if our broadcast is like going in and out. I'll find out from the producer afterwards.
Yeah, you know, the show goes on.
The show goes on.
The show goes on.
What I was saying is, if you're not getting, and we seem to have comments too, let's see if that telling us what's going on. Hello, so Haina and Tiffany, welcome. So just to backtrack in case we cut out, if your results are not matching the effort and what they should be after an extended period, you are unconsciously protecting yourself from what you want. You're not crazy. You have really good reasons. You have good reasons to protect yourself from love. You have good reasons to protect yourself from success. You have good, really good reasons to protect yourself from money, even, which is very kind of counterintuitive. So when I talk about change happening at the speed of safety, what I have seen is that when you make it safe, when you make having large amounts of money safe, and the money you have and the money you make supports love in your life and a great lifestyle and a great life. So you're making money doing good, so you don't have to worry about that. And you have good relationships, so you don't have to be afraid of being a victim, and you have healthy boundaries, and you've got a great life, and you aren't killing yourself to make money, you have much less disincentive to get rid of money. So we have experiences that go way, way, way back in childhood that we don't even associate with money that made us feel unsafe, unworthy, not good enough, not loved, and that will show up in our relationship with money, making money unsafe. If we had abusive parents, our parents are our first relationship with money because they tell us that we're loved, that we're worthy, and that we're safe, or they don't. So if you had experiences of not being safe in your life, accidents, violence, romantic betrayals, personal betrayals, just disappointments, all that kind of stuff starts to build a relationship with life that shows up in your relationship with money. And that creates what I call the money monster. And what I found is when you make money safe, whoa, it's like taking the brakes off the gas, and you suddenly all this stuff that was blocked becomes really, really easy and available. And I just have so many decades of seemingly miraculous stories of people making money, manifesting money, getting job interviews and job offers even while on the phone with me. And I put a lot of it on my website at morganaray.com. Thank you.
Well, just a reminder, yeah, in case you were going to blow past that,
yeah,
MorganaRay.com.
Yes. And by the way, it's a tiny fraction because I get these emails every day, and I'm not putting thousands of these stories on my website. But it's true in money, and I made my business about money because it's really not. It's just that's the pain most people come to me about. And the financial results are good for marketing. The exact same approach also works for love. And after doing Slaying My Love Monster, I met Devin 2 months later at 45. After looking for my person since I was 5 years old. So 40 years of Love Monster, and then, get rid of that. And 2 months later, I meet Devin. That's what I mean about change happening at the speed of safety. When your subconscious no longer believes it has to protect you from something, then it stops pushing it away. You stop doing behaviors unconsciously that and energetically repel what you're seeking. And the good news is that experience changes before the results. You get rid of the money monster, and you get a new relationship with a money honey that you feel safe with, that you can have dialogue with, this imaginary new relationship paradigm, this imaginary person. You have that before anything outside of you has changed. You feel safe, and you feel wise, and you get to see new opportunities by having conversations, looking at the world together through your eyes and your money honey's eyes, looking at yourself through your money eyes, who loves you and see who you are, not through your own filter of neuroses. So the experience changes before your circumstances change. You can feel safe before your circumstances change. And you can have hundreds of millions of dollars and still be a total financially anxious wreck and insecure too, because I have coached the spectrum of people on public assistance and billionaires, which is one up above 100 million. And human beings are human beings. My producer says I'm shaky on the internet. I don't know why. I've shut down everything else. Yeah, I've noticed my internet has been weird for the last 2 days. I checked the speed. It's supposed to be good. So I hope everybody can see and hear. Question number one, Devin.
I mean, interesting language about feeling safe in terms of people doing well with money. And I think that's probably true for things, whether that be or finances or anything else, any part of our world where we have to go out and interact with other people. There's a chance that we've had a bad experience before that sort of like took root inside of you. So you can't go do the kinds of things that frequently, as a relationship person, I frequently talk with people who want the thing. Right? It doesn't matter what the thing is. Maybe it's just to talk with their spouse in a vulnerable way. But maybe because they're men, that's not what we do, and you're trained to feel uncomfortable and that we don't do this and pull yourself up by the bootstrap. Fair enough. That's part of culture. It's just, you know, it's just kind of the way it is. Or women want to say something to their husband that's very personal, but they're afraid that they're not going to listen, and all of those kinds of things. And what invariably happens is that they get up to the sort of the ledge, right? It might be like if you're bungee jumping or something like that. You're tethered to this elastic band. People think this is fun. To me, it would be traumatic. But the point is that you walk up to the edge, and then you look, and you go, wow, that is really high up in the air. And so invariably what will happen is for a lot of people that they want to get this thing, and it sounds easy and it makes sense, and they don't feel comfortable, and so they won't proceed. And so I think that's kind of what you're talking about, right?
That is, but it's not conscious. Like for me, I had no idea that I had negative feelings about money. I was aware of some, like guilt of charging to help people felt spiritually wrong. And I was embarrassed and uncomfortable, mostly because I really didn't want to hurt anybody. And I felt like charging money would be hurting people. But when I imagined money as a person after just a really, really devastating disappointment and just years of putting everything I had into my business and failing, when my coach asked me if money were a person, who would your money be? And I saw this vivid, big, scary, tall, violent dude who caused fights and repulsed me and frightened me. That was when I realized, oh, there's stuff that I know I felt about money. That dangerous, and I could feel with every cell of my being that I needed to create distance. And then all of my failure made perfect sense for the first time in my life. This is especially an issue, and I know you and I both have to deal with that. When you're kind of a spiritual and service-oriented person who really cares about others, that, and you don't want to do harm, and you want to be in integrity, and there's so much stuff done for money that is exploitative and harmful and outright victimizes people and other creatures, and then that creates, I think, a monster dynamic in itself. And I call it reverse snobbery, where it's really, really easy for me to default to being too good, too noble, too generous, too kind, too wonderful, too charge, which is really unhealthy to get into that place, because that's like rejecting the rules of life. And I think it actually takes a certain level of humility to say, this is my business and this is what I charge and this is what it's worth. So I'm not saying puff things up to more than they should be, but it's also repulsive to undervalue your work, and that will push clients and sales and jobs away too. So the happy sweet spot is integrity, where you respect your contribution and you love your contribution. You love the help that you give to other people, whether you're painting or mowing lawns or teaching tarot or coaching or whatever you do. Like our producers providing, you know, this radio platform for us. So you just want to be in integrity. And when your relationship with money is a relationship with a person that doesn't feel like money, but feels like a person worthy of love, that's a game changer. Because then you can have conversations and it doesn't, then for me, the question is, am I being a loving partner? My honey, like to as a person and not to as money. And I don't want to break his heart and I don't want to be a jerk. And then I get to make financial decisions from a place of love and service and generosity. What do you need? And by definition, my money honey shares my values. So he doesn't want to be hurting people or making the world a bad place either. So part of why we get along so well is he wants the change in the world that I want in the world. So we get to work together for that. Second question, and maybe I've already answered it with my rambling. Second question is, you've also said that our money monster represents all the unworthiness and it wants you to die and all that stuff. What if I'm so depressed and suicidal, like I don't want to play this game anymore? How do I get the motivation to slay my money monster because I just really want to manifest money? Okay, there are a few really big separate things here. So when I talk about the monster representing a death wish, it's what I find when I create the money monster. I've never, ever found the monster itself, like the root cause of the money problem has never, ever actually been about money. The money is the symptom of deeper stuff that has made me feel unloved, unworthy, or unsafe. That doesn't have to do with money. Usually it's the more I can get off the topic of money, the easier it has been for me to find what is the real issue. Like my husband loves to talk about the thing behind the thing. So the money monster is really the thing behind the money. And it will work on money too, but it'll also work on love and all sorts of other things because we're really getting to your relationship with existence. So there are two things here. When you're in that dark place, it's really easy to like find the monster quickly. It's not as hard. Like I wanted to die when I like right preceding meeting my money monster. I was in that dark place. It came super duper easily. So I take everything in my life in the world that makes me miserable, that I struggle with. I hate saying something else makes me miserable because that gives power away. But like I might use suffering animals. I might use climate change. I might use human trafficking. And then I also might use, you know, unfair experiences in my own life or things that I'm feeling insecure. And it will, I've done it many, many times when I feel like, oh, I think I need to like give my relationship with money and life an adjustment. Let's see, can I find a new monster? And so I'll find new things that bother me or things that I can draw from again to see what I discover this time when I do it. So it's like all the stuff that makes life not worth living to you.
So just, I wanted to interject only because in the letter, it talks about being so depressed and suicidal.
That's the separate thing. Yeah.
Right. It's just, so it's, all I can say in this, and then I'm going to stop talking so you can finish your eloquence, is you are feeling that way. Help, those of help that's available. I wasn't expecting that letter to pop up, so I don't have that information, but I know that there's loads and loads of help. There's numbers that you can call. Please look it up. Just, you know, the good news is depression.
You're shaking the camera.
Sorry, depression and things like that are things that can be managed and can go. So I'm sorry.
We're the same. Talking in the hope that somebody can hear me. So. Yes, that was why I wanted to separate this second question into two parts. Because when you're depressed and suicidal, get help. Don't try to muscle it yourself. When I've been in that place, I went to a therapist. There was even times in my depressions just... And my experience was different than some people I know. It never numbed me. It just made the pain manageable enough so that I could deal with it, so that I could get better. And then as soon as I was better, I would get off of it. So I think that I take it very, very seriously, because what I believe, and I'm not a doctor, I don't play a doctor on TV, but what I believe... my own experience, serotonin and some of those other chemicals that make you like, okay. So whether it's triggered by, like in my case, the accident or just life events, I think that our bodies react to trauma and we can... It becomes a medical issue, like severe depression, I think, becomes a medical issue. And you need a real expert, a real doctor, a real professional, just like for diabetes or any other medical issue, to help break the cycle so that you have the support you need to get better. So I think that when you're in that place of being... so depressed and suicidal, don't just try to pull yourself up by your bootstraps. And I've been at a time in my life so depressed that I even lost the desire to get better. And I'm very, very lucky that I survived that, because ultimately I just did get better. So that would be my homework for you, question asker, which is to... and I don't even know where you live or what country you're in, but however it works where you are, look up a therapist, interview a bunch if you can, to find the person you feel safe with, who you feel will understand you and help you get better. I'm totally, totally all in for interviewing a therapist, before committing to a therapist, so that you, because some are phenomenal and some are horrible, just like anything else, and get real medical help for that. Being so raw, yes, makes it easier to access the monster, but I also don't want you to go anywhere that you can't come back from safely. So that is my answer for that, is if you are in that place, and we are all in that place at some point in our life. I've never in my life met somebody who didn't have, you know, that dark night of the soul at some point. Yeah, so welcome to the club. Welcome to humanity. Get help so that you are safe.
So there's also a question of another unnamed person. Hi, Mike Ghana. I realize I guess I was raised by a narcissistic family. Even going back to my grandparents' generation, my grandparents actually had a huge business, but I was still treated badly by my immediate and extended family. How do I slay that huge of a money monster?
Well, welcome to the family. My mom's a narcissist. Devin has some experience of that in his family too. Right on.
High five.
I would say put all of that into your monster. Part of the utility of having a monster is you can put, imagine that your monster, your personal, unique to you, money monster, imaginary person, used your family to hurt you. So it's almost like the monster is the puppet master that tortured and twisted and messed up your grandparents, and then tortured and twisted and messed up your parents, all to just set you up. And that way, when you destroy your monster, you don't have to kill your grandparents. You don't have to kill your parents in your mind. Because, you know, if you watch last week, step number three is you annihilate, you obliterate your money monster by any means necessary. It's all in your head. It's all imaginary. But it works in real life in the results, because our brains really can't tell the difference between imagination and what's in front of us. Because even when I look at what's in front of me, all I'm seeing is a picture in my head. So you want to make the monster sort of the puppet master, evil, you know, evil magician behind the scenes, so then you can destroy the monster, who then like drops all the puppet strings. And then all that nonsense from your grandparents and your parents that used to be so hurtful no longer has to feel personal to you, because it's not. Narcissistic abuse is never about you. It's about the narcissist who has his and her own deep narcissistic pain. That is not for you to fix, because you can't. You can't. So what your job is as a human being is to develop a healthy distance, a healthy boundary, so you don't take it personally. So you can find it maybe, depending on the relationship, maybe it can be amusing because you're no longer in danger. Or maybe it just doesn't belong in your life at all. You get to choose. And that would actually be a great conversation to have with your money honey after you do all the money monster work, get rid of the monster completely, and then you meet your money honey. And you a very good conversation. Like, do I want to have a relationship with these people? How do I want to respond to these people? Because a fundamental rule of life is you cannot change other people. Like, don't marry somebody you want to change. Don't do it. It's not fair to them, and you will disappoint yourself. Don't try to change your parents, because it's not going to happen. And if their behavior is not acceptable in your life, then your responsibility is to remove yourself from the behavior, whether it's by limited visits or however it were, or not seeing them at all, or seeing them under certain conditions where you leave if it's not okay. But you have to be the driver. And let's see, we're about 40 minutes into the show, and I promised two things that are seemingly not related. One, I promised that I would answer two money monster questions. And by the way, anybody who wants to call in, hello, phone numbers. I forgot, some people are only listening, but the phone number to call in if you want to call with a real live voice is 888-627-6008. So I promised I would answer those two money monster questions, and we got a bonus one. Thank you. And I also hinted that I might be able to get my husband to do a tarot card reading.
Yeah, she promised, but just didn't discuss it with
Surprise!
Right. And,
you have like 30 seconds to either call in with a question that you would like to ask, type it in or call it in.
I think I'm just going to go with, I'm probably going to read a very broad, general thing that people hopefully will find something that makes sense to them based
upon
cards.
This is what happens when we don't discuss.
Right, where I'm just...
A sense of humor and a lot of affection.
So I'm going to read these cards, traditional Rider-Waite. And by the way, for those who, there's lots of ways you can kind of look at this. I tend to look at the cards as sort of saying, it's a little
bit. Back your card shark days?
What?
Shuffling the deck?
A little bit, not much. I played in casinos. She's alluding to there was a period in my life where I was playing poker for a living, and it was a lot of fun. And it's I kind of miss those days. I mean, it's been years. I don't have the same thirst for the game that I once did. These tarot cards, in case you don't know, sure, it could be like a fortune-telling kind of thing, but really what they are is 78 cards that sort of deal with components of the human psyche. At least that's the way I tend to look at them. There's more of an occult connection that deals with the Tree of Life and some other things. And I'm not going to bore you with the details. Because
you just taught how many weeks on all
this? Oh, geez. It was something like 7 weeks. Or no, not 7 weeks. 7 months every week for at least 90 minutes, more often.
Oh, it was never 90 minutes. It was usually 2.5 hours.
Yeah, no, it was a long time where basically we did a deep dive on this. Basically, I was teaching a class on tarot, how to read it, why do you care, and all the symbolism that goes into all the cards. And so I don't fancy myself necessarily as a reader, per se, like a tarot reader, although I've done quite a bit of it. And
will I find love?
But we're not answering that question. I'm actually going to answer the question.
And I already did. Okay.
Yes, I'm going to answer the question, what do you need to know for the end of the week? And so take it for what it's worth. I will say that I tend to read cards in a variety of different ways, meaning my wife wants me to no longer shuffle on the bare table because it's making too many clinking sounds. So she's politely moved over.
I'm very
thing.
Subtle.
She's very subtle. She's just a quiet whisper. Just floats in and out of your mind. So what I'm going to do, or the way I tend to do it, is I do it one of three ways. In other words, I either take an intuitive hit off of what the card is, or I take it off of sort of like what the traditional understanding of the card might be, or some of what I would consider to be sort of like second and third level understandings of different occult principles, which I may discuss, I may not discuss. It really depends. Go ahead.
So is this just, are you going to pull one card or are you going to do an actual spread?
Well, no, I think I'm just going to do three cards. I'm not going to do like a big spread, like a Celtic cross or something like that, because then we've been here for a really long time. Mm. And really, I was just thinking, oh, this is something we do for like 5 minutes.
Okay.
Because what,
So tell us about a three-card spread. What does that mean?
Three-card spread basically means is I'm going to pull three cards. I'm going to pull a card that represents sort of like what's now, and then probably just in try to kind of give it in sort of like different contexts for as many people as possible. Then I'm going to give a card that will be dealing with sort of like the past, and how that may figure into and inform what's going to be happening in the future. And so for the question for the week is going to be, what is it that you need to know right now? So I've already been shuffling the cards and thinking about that question, and now I'm going to cut the cards. And the first card for the now, and I can see my wife is already very excited by this. The first card is the Sun card. I don't know if you can see that. There we go.
Yeah.
You can
That's
see the Sun
good
card.
One.
In general, it's a good card. In other words, what you can see, and I think my wife is going to want to kind of She's doing something. Oh, she's sort of like this white pony with a naked, happy child on top of it. There are sunflowers. Background. The sun is bright and shining. There is an orange sort of...
Sunflowers?
Oh. Well, no. There's like an orange flag in the background. And for me, all of this stuff is sort of like balanced and secure. To me, the child, the naked child, sort of has the sunflowers in his or her hair. And it's sort of like a joyous celebratory day. So that's kind of what's happening now, which is to some degree sort of an ironic thing, being that we are in the middle of a pandemic, being that we are sort of in the middle of social uprising and social change. We are in a very politically strained climate. So how do we take this card? So if, again, I'm reading this card for sort of like for what's now and for as many people as possible, because in general, you know, I like to be very specific to who's ever kind of doing this right now. So when we talk about the sun card, I would look at this card in this particular circumstance within this and I would probably have happened over and over again with many people during this sort of crisis period. And that piece is that for most of us, even with all this stuff, a great many of us can look around the room. Like right now, you know, without question, I have a measure personally. Like I have a measure of anxiety, a measure of uncertainty, a measure of challenge in the world, just because the world is what it is. And one of the things that I do over and over is sort of check in with what's happening here and now. And the here and now is that for the most part, I have the ability to count my blessings. In other words, don't get me wrong. There hasn't been, like, certainly over the last 6 months for me, I think I've had, I think, seven good friends, meaningful people die, which is horrible. And so the last thing I want to do is count my blessings, but it's really one of the first things that I should be doing. And so to me, the sun is, and perhaps for many, and this may be a political notion for some, is that, you know, there's a lot of, I think, perhaps a lot of good to be noticed in this very moment. I think because we get wrapped up in what's happening in our daily lives and certainly the world at large, I think it's really easy to kind of forget about what's happening in the world and recognize that. Now, the sun, if you will also notice, isn't necessarily, I don't know if you can see that, the sun isn't really sort of like smiling. Now, certainly the child is because it's receiving the warmth, and certainly the sunflowers are in bloom and they're beautiful, and the flag is high, and there's a gentle breeze, and there's a pure white pony, and it's really kind of seems good. But the sun itself is sort of ambivalent. And so the way I would take that is that the light is intended to be here. In other words, the light's intended to be here so we can go about our world and sort of move forward within it. But ultimately, its point, this kind of understanding, is that the sun within itself, its job is to share light, right? You were about to say something?
Yeah, well, as you're talking and I'm looking at the card, I also have this thought that even though things look terrible, something good is going on, is like how that is reading to me, especially we are receiving the light. Even though things look awful, maybe something really good is going on right now that we just aren't.
Yeah,
I mean, recognizing or privy to.
Right. No, and I would agree with that. And I think there's a certain measure of that that's happening all the time. Sometimes it's easier to see than other times. I think there's sort of been studies that when somebody's life is going miserable and all of a sudden everything changes, like, oh, I need a job and I'm just depressed and sad because of whatever, right? This job, and then they get the job, everything's great, but they're the last one to know. Mm-hmm. And I think studies have shown that it takes something like 3 to 6 months for that person to kind of get out of the funk of needing a job but having a job, right? In other words, they have it. So I think this card is part of what's happening with that, or the way I would look at that card, Sorry, did you want to read Harmony?
Yes, you. It's like, even though things look really scary and horrible now, it's like the sun is shining her blessings on us. Like, things are going to get better.
That would be my take,
because I find it really reassuring, because it's a very surprising card to get right now.
Well, again, it just depends on what your mindset is. And one of the things, this is just a general tarot thing, is that a lot of people read cards and they see a card like this and then they think, oh, it's only fantastic. Or they get a card like the Devil or the Tower or something like that, or the Hanged Man, and it's like, oh, this is terrible. And that's not quite the case. It's not, I mean, life is what it is. It's filled with these ups and downs. It's filled with notions of transformation. It's filled with all kinds of things. And so I wouldn't look at any one card and go, oh my gosh, this is going to be the worst thing that happens ever, and there's no way out. And I would say the reason why I pointed out in the beginning is that there's 78 cards really are much more about sort of like a philosophical human condition.
But that we got a major arcana, that's a big deal.
And
it is an overall generally
I'm not saying
card.
No, I'm not saying it's a bad thing. What I'm saying is it's an odd card to get in this particular climate. And I'm not talking, if there was one person sitting across from me, mm-hmm. if there was one person, then I'd be directing the answer specifically to that individual. But because we don't have that, I'm talking to all of you.
Yeah.
So I'm talking to as many of you as possible. And so I'm taking that into consideration.
We have a caller.
Do we have a caller with a couple minutes left? I may not even get through this thing. Colleen. So hold on. I'm putting on my headphones. So let's hear what Colleen has to say.
Hi, Colleen.
Can you hear us?
Colleen. I called in once before.
Doug, I'm not hearing Colleen yet.
No, it's Pauline. You thought I said Colleen.
Oh.
Not right into the speaker.
Okay, so Colleen's not with us, so I'm just going to move on to card number two because we only have a few minutes left.
Again, the technology, I don't know if we're going to be sticking with this, but we're figuring it out.
We're figuring it out. It's all a process. So card number two, I haven't even seen it yet. Oh, look at that.
Is that the past?
No, that's the Four of Swords. So there is...
Does that represent the past?
Yes, this represents the past. So the past is, there is, as you can see, a whole lot of sadness going on. There's actually, if you'll notice, there's sort of like three swords here, and then there is a main sword at the bottom. And this kind of looks like a crypt of something that has died. And then if you will notice, up at this top corner, you will see sort of a merciful, you'll have to pardon me, you'll see this merciful stained glass window that has sort of like a shall we say, a socially higher up, perhaps an angelic form helping out a mother and child who appear to be sort of down on their luck. And it's perhaps reminiscent of the family of this individual who may have been a fallen warrior, something like that. But anytime we start talking about sort of like ideas, really about frequent, we're not frequently talking about physical death. I mean, once every great while, somebody may say, but my Aunt Lucy died 3 days ago.
But what about a timely COVID and all that death?
I'm saying that, well, I think we're still dealing with COVID. And again, we're not talking about individual people. 2 minutes, so I'm going to have to cut it short. But usually when I see a card like this, and I don't know, again, I'm talking about to all of you, and perhaps all of you have faced a certain measure of COVID in your life, and perhaps you will still, you know, in the near future. I tend to kind of put this ironically with a card or a place on the Tree of Life called Hesed, which actually deals with a lot of abundance, but it also means that things change. And this is part of that change that's happening in the past. So 90 seconds, let's talk about this final card, Wheel of Fortune. So another good card, and I shuffled these pretty well. So another good card, you'll see the four cherubim sort of like in each of the corners. There's all kinds of things that can be said about this tetragrammaton in the middle, but it's ultimately about the divineness of it. The Anubis kind of sphinx creature at the top deals with sort of like an afterlife type of thing, but it's also quite positive. Actually, there's the Anubis down here, and there's the sphinx-like folk at the
maybe
top.
30 seconds.
Oh, 30 seconds. Okay, what a drag.
So what does the Wheel of Fortune mean?
Well, the Wheel of Fortune things is that really things are sort of like cyclical. all of them. They come and go. But I would also say that because the Sphinx is on top and the Anubis is heading downward, I would see this as also as quite a positive card. In other words, the trajectory that we're seeing is that we had a certain measure of change. Right. And that could be pointing to a whole lot of things or individuals.
Could be grief and death.
Right. And here's a great time to take account into the positive things in your life. And better still is that we're getting a certain measure of the changing of the guard where the cherubim are sort of presiding. They are watchful. So lots of things. Also, the tetragrammaton name, the four letter name of the divine essence of God is also. So since we're running out of
time, it's getting better.
Things are on the upswing.
The universe is blessing all of us. And we have to do this again next week. Poor thing.
Well, at least I know about it this time. Yeah. So that's a plus.
So this has been Crazy Sexy Midlife Love. You can, you already saw our first 11 weddings at the beginning of the show. But you can go to Crazy Sexy Midlife Love to download Devin's wonderful ebook for free. Women are smarter than men.
Because they are.
Yes. And we will see you again next week at 5 p.m. Pacific time, same place. Mwah. Great love to all
Thanks
of you.
Thanks for being here. Is Doug there?